Tara's brief dissertation on healing concerning mental well-being of the healer. And a common thing that occurs from time to time with all healers is occasionally the God syndrome. I can cure anything. I am capable of healing everyone. Why does this happen? Well, it happens frequently. And all healers will suffer from it from time to time. Because being able to heal makes somebody feel better, makes you feel good. And the more successes you have, the stronger this feeling gets. Now, normally when it occurs briefly. I've suffered from it. But I can cure anyone. And what happens to shatter this illusion is normally a failure, and a massive failure at that, that you cannot save this person, no matter what you do. So being aware of this does not stop you from suffering from this problem. The God complex in itself is a useful tool to learn from, that you are not a God. Once this is brought home to you, after these very successful and spectacular healings, it is something that drains and shatters you. But having recovered from it, and most healers do, you have to go on and remember that there are failures and there are successes, as with everything. Why are there failures? You should not look at the successes and go, okay, what did I do to make that a success? Certainly, that is a good thing to do. But also, it's just as important to look at the failures and to say, where did I go wrong? Now, often, curing an illness, and this is kind of another topic, but not quite. Sometimes looking at the failures is the most powerful tool for successes. Now, there are three possible outcomes that can happen from a healing. The patient gets better, there is no change, the patient gets worse. Let's look at the first one. Now, if you are using junk science, you can use it in this way. It worked. The patient got better. It must be good. The patient stays the same. Ah, look, we've arrested it. We have stopped it. The patient gets worse. Well, we should have started sooner, or we should give them more. These three things are most common when using fake or junk science. But what is junk science? Junk science is using anything that is not known to work, but is thought to work. For example, fasting. Fasting to make somebody better doesn't work. Because it's going to happen anyway, one of the three outcomes, regardless of what happens. Using things that don't work for that situation. For example, let us say I prescribe a herb that will soothe colitis. Again, the three things that happen can happen, whether or not the substance was taken. Sometimes it's better to do nothing because it will take its course. Something that doesn't, can't think of the English translation for the word. But I was going to take a herb or a chemical that is used to help cure colds. It doesn't work. Vitamin C does work. It works better than doing nothing, but not as well as other remedies. Chicken soup or chicken broth. A well-known cure for the common cold. Is it junk science or is it real? Russ?
It's very real.
Yes, very real. And it does work. Why? Well, there's certain chemicals from the bones, actually, and the way that it is prepared that makes it work. Another tool that makes it work is the mind. The mind of the individual. We go over this time and time again of having the patient in the right frame of mind. It doesn't matter how good the medicine is, if the patient isn't in the right frame of mind, it's not going to work. Because the most powerful healing tool is what?
Positive thinking.
Exactly. With positive thinking, you can do two of the three things that I'm using tonight in junk science. Actually, I'll have a little Kara's Corner, junk science. With chicken broth, you can stop it or make it better. So, it works. But the mind is the key to making anything work. I can prescribe a junk science remedy. Here's one that will work if the person believes it will work. They have a headache. You take salt, sugar, a little bit of oil, virgin olive oil, a little bit of vinegar, a dash of dice chopped finely, and lettuce leaves. Mix it all together. Make the person drink it. Tastes revolting. If they believe that it will make their headache go away, that it will work, guess what? 90% of the time, it will. Now, dissertation over. Questions, Alan?
Can you use that same method or that same potion you gave me in a pill form?
Yeah.
Gel cap.
Whatever.
It won't taste bad, though.
But it doesn't do anything.
Oh, I don't know about that. There's some benefits to lettuce leaves.
It does nothing, Russ. It will not cure headaches.
Yeah, well, that's one aspect, right?
Exactly.
Now, you know how you've taught me how to cure headaches.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it seems to work well.
Yes.
Now, why can't you just use that?
Well, you can. But I'm saying that if somebody believes strong enough that something will work, it will work.
Right. So maybe that's what I'm doing. Just doing something that I feel will work.
It's possible. But in what I've taught you, it does work.
Right.
It does work. There's no it, and, or but. It works. Explain to the tape what I taught you.
Visualize the headache in my head, the pain, and then just project it outside my body.
Right. It's necessary because people will go, huh? What's he talking about? What's his secret?
All right.
But it has to be strong visualization. And you know it works.
Sure.
They know it has to work.
Well, it's just you get it once or twice and you've got the confidence to do it every time.
Exactly. Exactly. That is the key right there. If it doesn't work to start off with, it's not because it's not for you. It's because you do not know strong enough.
Right. Well, I've told people with migraines this, and there's no way it's going to work.
Oh, migraines are different.
Yeah.
Very different. In fact, somebody that you should talk to about migraines who does not suffer from migraines anymore, or not very often. Guess who that is?
Karen?
No. Yeah. Somebody close at hand.
Mark?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Concerning your God complex.
Yes.
Now, speaking of Carrie,
mm-hmm.
I mean, we worked pretty good miracles on her. You did, actually, but she did a lot of it.
Exactly.
Still, it'd be hard after something like that, especially with the successes she's gone through lately.
Mm-hmm. Not to suffer from it.
Not to suffer from it. How do you keep from doing that?
Because I've had failures. I learned long ago that I could not save everybody. And the successes are something to be relished and enjoyed. But not to go over and over again. Secondly, it was a success. A very good success. But she did most of the work. I can't take credit for that.
True.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if that was the case, Mark could take credit because he used his body.
Correct.
I could take credit because I gave her encouragement.
And you gave the room for it to be done.
And so on, sure.
Correct. You see, when in a healing, there is more than just the two people involved.
Right.
So, how can I take responsibility for everything that transpired in those sessions? A lot of it was ritualized, if you remember.
Ooh.
That is what she needed. The ritual itself changes and adjusts her frequency to mine. Remember, there were times where she would say something and you wouldn't hear me say anything. And she would laugh or smile or answer again out vocally what I was thinking. That is because I have changed her frequency to match mine. I had come down as far as I could, or up as far as I could, so that she could come down or come up to my frequency so that we could meet and work together.
So in essence, when the healer is, doing the work, it's actually the patient who's actually healing. So to avoid the complex, the best thing is to just keep understanding it's the patient doing it. And all you're doing is giving the patient the keys to help them heal themselves.
Yes and no. Yes and no. There are certain times where I do all the work. From beginning to end.
Like a broken arm or something?
Yes. I do the work. I set the bone. I wrap the bandages. I tell the person how to behave, how to clean quickly, how to think, how to react. I set up the structure for them to do the healing. I've done the work at that point. All they have to do is follow what I have told them. So you see that there are certain times where I do all the work, certain times when the patient does all the work, and certain times when we do the work, the patient and I, and those involved.
Understandable. So, when you've actually saved a life, there's all the points where you're going to lose a life.
Correct.
And even though, let's say you have 100% success rate,
mm-hmm.
okay, you had no failures whatsoever.
I'd like to meet a healer that has 100% success rate.
Well, that's what I mean. I mean, let's say that, they've only had 3 or 4 or 5 healings that mm-hmm. they've done. All 100%. Everybody got better.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The key is that you got to know the odds are against you.
You have to. But you also have to experience the coming down from the God syndrome.
So you have to feel, there's no way to stop it.
Right. Because it's going to happen. It will happen. Regardless of how great a healer you are. It
must be a humbling experience.
That's why it happens. It's important to understand that some people you cannot save.
Understandable.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
I have. Pray. Okay. Well, it doesn't look like I'm going to get my visitation tonight.
Maybe next
week. Yeah. Oh, by the way, next week is a free night.
I just said you're part of the page being loaded up anyway.
Mm-hmm. Besides, you got my thing from the channeling session last night as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I had that or not.
Please. Okay. Do a subsection, internet channelings. Can you do that?
Yeah, if I have the internet channeling, I don't want to type it all out.
No, you just take it from the page.
Okay.
How do you think Mark managed to print all that up?
Well, I know, I just think it's older and older. I have to make sure I nail it as soon as I can.
Okay. Frank. Okay, next speaker.
Okay.
Yes, next week's pre-session.
Okay.
So, no notes needed. Uh-huh.
Hey, what's up,
buddy? Yo, dude! Dude.
Thank you.
Oh, you have both of them.
You know what she means? There's no notes needed. You need to like, go through about a page of notes.
As opposed to how many?
Half a page.
Well, I don't know what she's got planned for next week, but it's definitely a open session.
How are you doing?
I'm doing awesome.
Good to hear it.
So, what can I do for you?
I learned a few things this evening.
Oh, yes. Okay. My brief dissertation time. Everybody gets to dissertate tonight apart from Tia. Stop sticking your tongue out, hon. I'll bite it all. Okay.
Did you give a dissertation?
No. Every one of the regulars.
No.
Okay. Let me see. Coercion. And certain mindsets for using coercion in a beneficial way. How does coercion benefit us? Well, it is a tool that is used by an individual that is a coercer to be able to control and manipulate persons or entities or beings around them for a purpose that is beneficial to all parties. How do you decide what is beneficial for all parties? Well, this is more of a gut instinct. What feels good? What is right? What you know to be morally, seems to be the flavor of the week, to be right. Is it moral to coerce somebody into giving you a job? I do love using this analogy, and I will use it over and over again. Is it morally right to coerce somebody to give you a job? Well, it depends on what the job is and whether or not you really need that job. If it is for betterment, then yes. If it is for self-service, no. Because coercion is one of those interesting little abilities that if you don't use it right, it will feed back on itself. And in doing so, it will cause harm to you. There are certain ways to keep on the straight and narrow. This most frequently is morals and gut instinct. Is it right? Is it wrong? Sometimes you don't have time to decide whether it is right or wrong, but do it. When you do find yourself in that situation, you can come back later and repair the damage that you have done. As long as you do it with good intentions at heart, it is easy to repair any damage that you might have done. If it is done with a self-serving purpose, and you know this, then it becomes more difficult to repair the damage that has been done, but more necessary to repair the damage that has been done. Because if that is left unaddressed, it will come back to haunt you at a later time. Coercion in itself is a good tool. It's a very useful tool. But it is one of the more harder ones to actually master and use beneficially. It is quite common, from what I have heard, on a third dimensional level, to use it in a negative way. Sometimes coercion is used in what appears to be a negative way. For example, let us take my favorite topic, somebody that is sexually repressed, and they have difficulty interacting in a sexual way. Using coercion to seduce a person like that, that wants to be sexually active and interactive, is good because it frees up their libido from being bottled up and pent up inside them. So by seducing somebody that wants to be seduced, but is used to being having their sexual urges repressed, can be beneficial. Sometimes, however, you can unleash a monster, as has happened quite a few times in the history of the world. Somebody that becomes, after being coerced into becoming sexually active, that turns into a sexual monster, appetite-wise, has to be refocused and have that urge addressed, because it will destroy them. For example, Katrina the Great. She was seduced and became very sexually active. It ruled her life. Certainly, she was a great leader as a Tsarina. She could have been a lot better if she wasn't hopping in and out of beds half the time. Another example, I can't remember her name, but she became very sexually active, Greek mythology, and ended up being seduced by a bull and giving birth to the Minotaur. This is a myth, but it is also a way of looking at being overly sexually active. Now, when that situation occurs, the person that has opened up this individual to their sexual excesses needs to be the person that puts the proverbial cork back in the bottle. But do not turn the person back into a sexually repressed person. They must learn how to have a sexually normal life. But that, again, depends from the individual to individual. What is normal for me may not be normal for you. So, by using your coercion to help somebody in a sexually repressed state has to be done very carefully. And how you do this is little by little, bit by bit. Otherwise, as I pointed out, you will have a sexual monster on your hands. If you use it repeatedly and repeatedly and repeatedly to have an intimate reaction with the person that is sexually repressed, you will create the monster. You have to be able to do it as few times as possible for them to lead a normal life. Certainly coercing them to become sexually active to start off with is the only way that successfully works. But if you use it the next time and the next time and the next time, then you will create a monster. But if you don't use it on the second time and it happens and you make love with that person, it must be done differently than the first time. It must be either very hard and fast or very slow and tender. It has to be the opposite of the initial coercive action, so that the experience both sides of the coin. It's Suppose I could get myself a job as a sexual therapist on this. Don't you think so, Russ?
I do.
Of course you would go. You don't need to coerce it on that. Do you have any questions, Ned?
Yes. This ties along kind of with what Carr was saying in regards to the fact that isn't being as a coercer subject to also that God complex?
Yes.
And beating that down, giving some in our audience of hundreds of listeners
an example?
An example of how to beat it down, how to not do it, how to get around it. Get out of it.
I've never experienced, from what I've heard, it happens on the third dimension. Our educational system up here sets in certain rules that are, think what you are doing. Think of the negative and the positive. Negative first. What can go wrong? What harm can you do? Then think of the positive and what good can come from coercion. So by having these simple structures and sitting down in a learning environment and debating the negatives of coercing in itself drives home the point that you can have failures. Infrequently you have failures in the early years learning how to use coercion. On the third dimension, I don't really have the experience to be able to tell you what you must do to overcome that God experience, except for, again, sooner or later, it will happen where you will be brought down.
Okay. Well, I know you talked about that one corrupt courser on Sirius.
Mm-hmm.
And that sounds a similar situation with the other God complex.
No. And he just got his kicks from doing harm.
Okay. Now, you did make one little statement there that I have a little problem with.
Uh-huh.
That maybe you can clarify. Where you said, through your studies, it appears to be, it's much harder to act in a negative manner coercively on the third dimension.
I meant that the opposite way around.
I had one or two little slight problems with that when you said that.
Mm-hmm. It's easier on the third dimensional to, yes, coerce in a negative way.
Say, wait a minute. Okay, yeah, that makes more sense now.
Mm-hmm. Okay, my time is up.
Bye, Carrie.
Bye. Greetings, Russ, for the final time as I have to depart for a council meeting.
Okay.
You have covered the only point that I was going to bring up. Kiri, in her excitement, let her mouth run away and did not monitor what she was saying correctly. That is all I have to say, except for live long, prosper, and I'll be back.
Have a great meeting.
Okay, thank you. Okay. Well, I still don't have time for dissertation because
Bunny.
Bunny, yes. She will be giving a demonstration, I suppose.
Okay.
She is the initial probe heir.
Okay.
Because you've had experience with hair probings. Okay.
Bye.
Bye. Hello.
Hi, Bunny.
Sorry, just my theme music.
I know, I've been singing it myself for a while.
Uh-huh.
How you doing, Aaron?
Horny.
Obviously.
Very horny.
Okay, so we're at normal status then.
Uh-huh, nipples are hard.
wet between the legs.
No, not actually.
Well, that's not ointment. No. It's really aroused.
Yes, I am aroused. I am in a...
Two different things completely.
I could get very wet very quickly. Okay, let me see. What are we here to discuss tonight?
I'll probe
you. Oh, I am to probe you, huh? Well, I've changed my mind. I'm not going to probe you.
Which means you're going to probe me.
What makes you say that?
Just logical statement of fact.
Mm-hmm.
You throw me off guard. So I'm not worried about my shielding. Then you attempt to probe me. So therefore, I learn how to get the point across.
So what did the doctor want today? Well,
what doctor?
The doctor that you did some computer work for.
There wasn't a doctor today.
Or was that yesterday?
A couple of days ago.
Oh, it was.
A few days ago.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. How do you do it? And that way I can know how to defeat it. I don't even know that you're doing it, so obviously I'm screwing up somewhere here, and I need to know how to get around that.
Give you a demonstration.
Okay.
Where did the feline go?
Right next to you. Other side, right there. Straight down. Oh, now you're walking over here.
Come here, feline.
No, she's in front of you on the side. Here, I'll give you one on my lap. Demonstration.
Demonstration.
Demonstration, please.
Demonstration on what I do to you. Mm-hmm. What am I doing to the feline? Mm-hmm. The feline is comfortable here. There we go. Now, normally, the feline would start to peck. And that's basically what I do to your shielding, is I make it peck. And by making it peck, by soothing it, and stroking it, and lowering your resistance, and distracting you. Makes it easier for me to penetrate.
No.
I use the one secret weapon that women have.
Sexy.
Mm-hmm. Even though it's not my body down there, I can still do it. I use my voice. I use body language. And I use charm.
Well, you look harmless, though.
Don't let this playful, youthful, well-toned nymphomaniac's body fool you. Underneath this beautiful, feminine, charming, delightful, polite teenager beats the heart of a ruthless maniac. Unlike my sister.
Which one?
The one that's sitting over there sucking on my toes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Who I have wrapped around my little finger.
Anyway,
mm-hmm.
Back to this. Now, we're on to the question of God complexes this evening.
Oh, I am God.
Right. Well, which is a good point. That how do you avoid, after getting through someone's shield so easily, the God complex taking over? Or you just let it?
I've never had the desire to want to take over totally.
Because it's a form of coercion, correct?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm stanked with coercion.
So therefore, again, as it would carry, there is a problem where you would get that God complex.
I suppose so. I've never had that experience.
Well, I mean, the possibilities are there.
As I said, I guess so.
Right.
The fact that I've never experienced it doesn't mean to say that it won't happen. You've got to remember, I have not been to much in the way of formal education.
Oh. That's true.
Mm-hmm. Until I was 13, I was schooled at home.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of started enjoying the same recreations that Leah got into, sailing and hanging out with the sailors. And kind of, she was into sunning herself in private, whereas I am more of a extrovert. She's an introvert. So I started dancing and playing with myself whilst dancing and so on. I suppose that in itself is a form of coercion.
Mm-hmm. Well, now you're trying to become a healer, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's been my observation that a coercive healer is quite a handy commodity to have.
Yes, I've been told that by quite a number of people. One that I had my head between her legs the other day, and she goes, Big Sam pulls me up and she goes, "Hun, apart from tasting good and having a good time, you really should start to learn more about healing. And my sister will help you with your coercion so that we can mesh them together to be a team."
And, yeah, they make a great team.
Mm-hmm.
Good. I look forward to
mm-hmm.
seeing what happens there.
Yeah.
Let's see. I was going to talk about something that I can't remember. Something specific I wanted to ask you about.
My panties?
No. Part of the question.
It concerns the hollow. Correct?
No.
No? No. Have you tried that yet?
No, not yet.
Mm-hmm.
I've been working a little too hard.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
There's something.
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible to coerce mind-to-mind and not be, you know, without the other person's permission, and yet still not, you know, have this moral problem?
I don't know. I don't have the schooling.
Why, unfortunately?
No. I'd much sooner talk about an explanation on the moral dilemma that your people have with promiscuity. Oh, are you coming to see me dance tomorrow?
Oh, yes, that's right. I will have some free time for that.
Mm-hmm.
I should be able to be there, yes.
Yeah. That's 9 o'clock. Corner bar. Oh, 9 o'clock our time.
Right, 11 o'clock our time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to get well rested for that.
Yeah, I'm going to be dressed in some really sexy, hot stuff. Had it custom made for me, too. It was a gift. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, here's the reason. I've been thinking about this question that you have, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And I have an answer for you now.
Okay.
The problem comes, in the most part, from what I understand, as diseases. It's not such a Bible issue anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be. It's mostly the form of communicable diseases that get passed along due to promiscuity. Sexually transmitted diseases.
Okay, yeah.
Okay. There's quite a variety out there. Some are fatal.
What's AIDS? You have that in your mind with horror.
Right. It's the immune deficiency syndrome. And it's a fatal disease.
That's horrific. It attacks the cells and is basically destroys the ability to heal itself.
Yeah. It takes away your immune system.
Yeah, I've got all that.
Right. They've got it's history.
Syphilis? That's curable by the looks of it. But it's nasty.
There's it others does, that aren't.
It does what to the brain? That's nasty. That's horrible.
Genital herpes. Just mm-hmm. as bad, but it's mm-hmm. still pretty bad.
What's hepatitis B? See, I read it there, but it means nothing to me.
Yeah, it's jaundice. Basically something that affects your liver, and it takes away the liver's ability to function in its proper manner. So it releases poisons into your system.
Okay.
I'm trying to think of a few others here for you.
Mm-hmm. Gonorrhea.
Yeah, gonorrhea. Mm-hmm. That's a real bad one.
Mm-hmm.
Hades the worst.
Yeah.
Down to, there's one.
What's that one?
You can't get a mind fixed on it, but it's permanent. There's no cure for it, but it won't kill you.
Isn't that streptococcal? Then that's bacteria that you're thinking of.
No, I can't get my mind up. But I mean, that's what I'm talking about. Basically, the whole, and I'm not even touching the surface here.
Yeah, I've got all of that.
Okay.
I got all of that.
Some of it's curable, some of it isn't, even if it is curable.
Oh, so that's why you're doing that. It's for the tape. Okay.
Yeah, it's, even though it's curable, it's still going to leave permanent scarring or problems. Oh, crabs.
No, crabs is curable.
Oh, I know crabs is curable, but it's very embarrassing and pernicious little bugger.
Mm-hmm.
If you got that one. Anyway, the
he's saying that Mark calls it the clap.
No, clap's different. Clap is gonorrhea. Crabs is little.
Oh, little.
Little live little buggers.
Yeah. Mechanized dandruff.
Yeah, you could say that. So, anyway, a lot of the problems that we're seeing due to sexually transmitted diseases go along with the moral issues of being promiscuous, whereas you don't have those problems up there.
No.
See, if we had the same kind of technology that you have as far as healing goes, and as far as keeping these things from happening, yeah, you'd see a much more promiscuous open society out there.
Yeah. And, yeah, having probed and read that all in your mind, I had it explained to me whilst you were explaining it, is that you have to explain it because of
the tape
device.
Correct. So that people can, when I go back and put some internet, I'm not going to have a big blank spot.
Going.
One-sided conversations. Me and Garrett, yeah. Happens, a lot happens to us. So.
Mm-hmm.
It's a helpful level. Anyway, yeah, that answers your question, though.
Ah, okay, I understand.
Girls who are very promiscuous are seen as disease carriers.
Mm.
Like mosquitoes or something.
It's Bethany.
Bethany. Bethany is...
Why did you link her with promiscuity?
I did. Okay, that was unconscious. Completely. I don't see her as really promiscuous. Maybe I do. What? I don't know. Anyway, she used to be one of our group members here.
Ah.
And,
But when you were thinking of promiscuity, a whole load of names popped through your head. And then she was one of them.
Amazing. You see my mind process better than I do. Mm-hmm. It's pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, basically, girls who are promiscuous aren't seen as being morally upstanding.
Yeah. And you have an image of them as well, is that they tend to be a little bit of reject from society. Explain that.
Well, for the same exact reason.
Because
they don't take care of themselves.
Yeah.
They have no safety factors built into themselves. So they're, causing harm.
So they don't take care of themselves. I don't see how that could work, because people like myself that are very sexually active. Can you stop that for a second, please? Thank you. People that are very sexually active like myself, we take great care of our cleanliness and our looks. Now, I will sit and I will brush and brush and brush and brush and brush my hair until it shines. And then I will put on my lipstick and I will make sure that shines. And I will hide any blemishes that I have, such as hickeys or spots on my nose or cuts or scrapes. I will hide them to be as beautiful as I can. But yet you have the image of somebody that overly painted with makeup, smelling strongly of perfume.
Right, let me put it this way. Let's say, for example, someone who is sexually promiscuous gets AIDS. Okay, on one night with the guy. All right?
The next night, he's another guy. He's not that age. He's going to die. Now, this might go on for as many guys as she has.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they won't catch it. Some people are immune to it and don't get it. Some of them only get a lesser form of it.
Mm-hmm.
But she's a carer, and she won't know until months later, because it's a one of those things takes 10 months to even start to show any signs of it. And she's basically infected every single person that she's been with, unless they practice, of course, safe sex.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say she doesn't like to practice safe sex. Well, guys aren't going to argue with her, in general.
Mm-hmm.
Unless she says something, they'll just jump right in.
Yeah.
So she might not even have it. I know she has it. And yet, she's just been the cause of the deaths of who knows how many people.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she does.
Yeah.
But then they go on and infect, like they say, their mates.
Yeah.
And their mates, and so on, and so on.
So that's why your society has the lookdown upon somebody that is active.
Absolutely. It's now got, it didn't used to be this bad. Back in the 60s and stuff, where you didn't have to worry about that.
Mm-hmm.
But now with AIDS, it's a very real possibility that, anybody you're with